Special Report.
A special report on deglobalization of finance.
Transactions. A level playing field? The proliferation of national payment systems spurs competition, innovation, and frictions.
In February 2022, protesters of Russian warmongering daubed their faces with paint, draped themselves in Ukrainian flags, and clutched signs bearing passionate messages about, of all things, the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, or SWIFT. It made sense. As Russia attacked Ukraine, the West searched for ways to punish Vladimir Putin, removing Russian banks from the primary network used to make large cross-border payments was an easy call. It would sever a crucial artery connecting the world to Russia's financial system, adding to a battery of sanctions that would crush its economy. But Mr. Putin was ready. After Russia's invasion of Crimea and eastern Ukraine in 2014, it faced the same threat of excision from SWIFT. There are risks in using the global financial networks, Elvira Nebulina, the governor of the Bank of Central Russia, told CNBC in 2018. Therefore, since back in 2014, we have been developing our own systems. Those are SPFS, a financial messaging service to take the place of SWIFT for interbank transfers, and MIR, a card payment network to replace Western providers such as Visa. Being cut off from parts of the global payment system in 2022 will have inconvenienced many of Russia's corporate treasurers and certainly has made cross-border transactions much harder. But it did not strike a fatal blow. Russia is an extreme case of a broader trend. National payments networks have sprung up around a world once dominated by Western ones. Mostly they have arisen not from a desire to dodge sanctions while invading a neighbour, but to provide vital digital infrastructure for the populations of fast-growing economies. Their architects also crave the revenue streams and political clout that come with the control of payment rails underlying global commerce. Yet they too have one eye on the West's weaponization of the financial system and are looking for ways to avoid falling victim to it. The most developed of these examples are in China and India. Take China first. Around the same time Russia was developing SPFS, China was working on CIPS, another financial messaging system intended as an alternative to SWIFT. It was launched in 2015 and, though still a minnow next to its Western rival, is expanding quickly. As of March, 1,511 financial institutions were using it. Only 13% of SWIFT's 11,500-strong membership, but a number that has more than doubled since 2018. Leave Russia, a Ukrainian campaign group, claims that this figure includes around 30 Russian banks, further reducing the impact of Western sanctions by allowing them to make cross-border payments in yuan. For now, the volume of transactions made through CIPS is relatively tiny, averaging 482 billion yuan, that's $67 billion, per day in 2023. SWIFT, by comparison, says it processes payments worth some $34 trillion per day. But again, CIPS's numbers are climbing quickly. That $67 billion was 24% higher than the average daily volume during the previous year. Should its membership continue to soar, network effects have the potential to prompt explosive growth in transaction volumes. At the same time, China's retail payment providers have also grown to rival Western incumbents such as MasterCard and Visa. UnionPay, a Chinese card network, is now the world's largest by transaction volume and is accepted in 183 countries. Alipay, a digital payment service, is accepted by 80 million merchants worldwide compared with Visa's 100 million. Owing to its antipathy to the West, China's burgeoning payment systems garner the most attention. But it is in India that the most exciting innovation has taken place. Unified Payments Interface, or UPI, started operating in 2016. By March 2023, it was processing transactions valued at some 139 trillion rupees, that's $1.7 trillion, or 50% of GDP, over the previous 12 months. UPI now accounts for more than three-quarters of India's digital retail payments. PwC, a consultancy, reckons that by 2027, that share will rise to 90%, even as the total volume of digital payments quadruples. UPI allows users to make fast, cost-free payments by sending a text or scanning a QR code. It has made life easier, cheaper, and more secure for businesses and consumers up and down the country. At the same time, the digital identity system UPI is linked to has revolutionized the Indian state's welfare system. Hundreds of millions of people can now receive direct benefit transfers to bank accounts linked to their digital IDs rather than as physical cash. This reduces the potential for such payments to be siphoned off by corrupt officials and simplifies the dispersing of emergency funds as during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now UPI is going global. It is linked up to payment systems in Sri Lanka, the United Arab Emirates, Singapore, Mauritius, and Bhutan. In February, the international arm of the National Payments Corporation of India, or NPCI, a state-backed non-profit which manages the platform, announced its expansion into France. The Times of India reports that NPCI has signed agreements to allow QR-based UPI payments in Malaysia, Thailand, the Philippines, Vietnam, Cambodia, South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, and Hong Kong. Meanwhile, India is using the technology behind its digital infrastructure to increase its influence abroad. Since 2018, the Modular Open Source Identity Platform, or MOSIP, a non-profit in Bangalore, has made a publicly accessible version of the code underlying India's digital identity system available to other countries. The idea, says Kalpana Koshar of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which supports MOSIP, is to allow developing countries to build digital public infrastructure suited to their own needs, rather than relying on others. This could go beyond digital payments to include healthcare records, public sector budgeting, and management of utilities such as water. Pilot projects are underway in 17 countries, including Ethiopia, the Philippines, Morocco, Madagascar, and Niger, and have registered IDs for 109 million people. Developing such infrastructure would be an obvious boon for the countries piggybacking on India's success. It would probably also provide a fillip to Indian IT firms, which, already familiar with the plumbing beneath UPI, would be in pole position for consultancy work in the countries deploying MOSIP. Ms. Kushar hopes that, being built along similar digital rails, payment systems based on open standards like MOSIP will be more easily interoperable. If such hopes are realised, the resulting connections could one day create an Indian-run alternative to SWIFT and CIPS beyond the control of either America or China. Could the proliferation of payment networks benefit not just the countries deploying them, but also the global financial system? The increased competitive pressure on incumbents and the innovation and service improvements it spurs is welcome. SWIFT has become notably less clunky to use in recent years, notes a senior executive at one global payments firm. Its transaction fees have fallen too, by a factor of four over the past 10 years after adjusting for inflation. Yet the new networks also bring the risk of fragmentation. Given their uses for evading the scrutiny of geopolitical rivals, governments will be tempted to insist domestic firms stick to their own systems. Even without such barriers being thrown up, the proliferation of national networks creates new frictions. SWIFT still has a role to play in linking up payment systems, but the difficulty is that every network has its own standards for data security and privacy. Finding ways for them to share the information needed to execute cross-system transactions, therefore, grows harder as more and more systems are connected. It also raises costs for big institutions that want to operate across multiple networks, since they must maintain separate capital pools on each one. Compared with using only one system, that means they are less able to net transactions off against each other, and so need to move capital more frequently. Nor is the fight to dominate global payment systems simply a question of which system comes out on top. It is also part of a bigger battle, to dethrone the dollar from its position as the world's reserve currency.